This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
There was a lot in the courtroom today. We're going to focus on the after party, the point where the jurors left the room, and then it was just the attorneys, Karen, and the press, and whoever wants to sit around other than a jury member to witness some fireworks. And you're going to be watching this with us for the first time, too. I've just heard bits and pieces of what's coming out of here, and I want to be kind of surprised. This apparently got pretty heated. What it's all about, new evidence that is being brought to the table, and quite possibly some pretty damning evidence.
Oops.
If there already wasn't a lot of that today. That came up. But we'll do a full recap on that in another video. So if you want to hear the full recap of the whole day, that's also going to be here on the podcast channel or on YouTube. Press subscribe so you can check all that out. Let's go right to it today in the trial of Karen Reed. And let's take a look at the...
That is it for today.
After party, as I'm calling it.
We are on schedule. So with that, I'm going to get you a few minutes early, so please do not discuss this case.
And maybe that's the wrong one. Is that the right one? I think that is the right one. Okay.
With anyone, don't do any independent research or investigation into this case.
She's dismissing the jury right now.
To see here and about this case.
Shortly,
let us know and be
that will
we'll see you tomorrow.
Move in here to the next piece.
They'll be rolling out the cake with the big surprise in it.
Yeah, it's coming right now if you're listening. Ooh, this is a big cake. That looks like fondant, a lot of fondant on that one. Mm-hmm. Fondant is not a good taste. Never had a good fondant on a cake. It looks
I'm not fond. They're beautiful. They're absolutely gorgeous. I think you can do amazing things with it, but the flavor... Yeah.
I'm surprised it's never been improved over the years. Somebody making delicious fondant. Or can you not? I mean, I don't know. I think that'd be something that we would have
figured
out.
And I'm a big almond person.
Yeah.
That works for me.
All right, here we go.
All right, so Mr. Lessie, I'll hear you. I'll hear you, Mr. Lessie.
Ta-da. Thank you, Your Honor. The topic I would like to raise with Your Honor is the timing and nature and significance of the information that the defense has received from the firm Aperture, and Your Honor may recall there are two individuals on the witness list that we understand are to testify in this matter. First is Dr. Judson Welcher, and the second is Shannon Burgess.
And are they testifying in reverse order, though, than what you said?
My understanding is, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
My understanding, Mr. Brennan has the best information, is that it's proposed that Mr. Burgess testifies first and Dr. Welcher testifies thereafter.
Okay.
So the Commonwealth has established in reports right up until May, not established, they have stated in the reports of Aperture, particularly the slide presentation of Dr. Welcher, a trigger called 1162-2 that they had associated in the report of Dr. Welcher with a specific time. And that specific time that they have associated with that trigger is 12:31:38 to 12:31:43. And we have been assuming that information, and this is from best memory, but I believe it's slide 137 or so, where the statement is in the slide. And so we have proceeded with our defense. We have proceeded with the work that has been assigned to ARCA based upon that time period. On May 8th, not too long ago, Your Honor, we received an amended report of Shannon Burgess that pushes that time period. Now, just going to give. So, although it was dated May 8th, we received it actually on May 11th. And in that report, Mr. Burgess states that he is making an amendment, and he is now stating that that infotainment trigger of 1162.2 is further back in time, and it is past 12:31:43.
Do you have the time?
I'm going to get the exact time, Your Honor. It is 12:32:16. And Your Honor may recall that the seconds, literally seconds, matter in the analysis of many factors. I won't go into them other than to say I went through and developed testimony with regard to the cross-examination of Mr. Whiffen. He had a timeline. He talked about much human volitional conduct. Suffice it to say that that information is literally, by seconds, determinative in some ways of various analyses. So we basically commissioned, if you will, ARCA to be looking at matters based upon the infotainment trigger 1162.2 of 12:31:38 to 12:31:43. As of May 11th, we received information that has changed that. Now, Your Honor, that is a Rule 14 violation, among other issues, but I wanted to start there. It's a Rule 14 violation. It's obviously, as I stated, an amendment of a report of a significant matter. And also, with regard to the defense's ability to provide a defense, we have to be able to to evaluate that information in terms of our entire defense. And it's just not limited to ARCA. It's our entire defense. The other data point I want to get to, so the effect it's had, we still haven't even been able to evaluate entirely that. And I believe, Your Honor, based upon the information that I have, that this may have been a calculated matter by the Commonwealth, but even assuming it's not calculated, the effect is having is pronounced. So what I want to do, Your Honor, is to look at what the reason Mr. Burgess has given, which leads me to be very concerned about a calculation and a strategy calculation here. Mr. Burgess states in his own words that the reason why he is changed, that time is being changed, is to, quote, align the trigger with Mr. Whiffen's analysis. And Mr. Whiffen's analysis is based upon the extraction data from Mr. O'Keefe's phone. And I believe it's undisputed that the extraction from Mr. O'Keefe's phone occurred years ago. And the data from that has been extant, it's been available years ago. So to me, Your Honor, that basis can't be a proper basis, at particularly this stage where we are approaching the end of the trial, just literally days before the testimony of Aperture. And we are in a very, very almost impossible, challenging situation. So, Your Honor, there are obviously, Your Honor knows the situation here. Our first request is that the May 8th report that we received on May 11th be not allowed, that it be not considered at all. As Your Honor knows, I don't like to use hyperbolic words, but the word has been used for us against us, ambush, ambush, ambush. If there's ever an example of an ambush, this is it. And so, Your Honor, our request is that Your Honor find a Rule 14 violation, that Your Honor have the remedy be that the violation, remedy be that this is not allowed, and that the Commonwealth proceed with its the information of Aperture that has been extant before the May 8th date of the report. Thank you.
All right. Do you have another option if that's not something that we do, right? Because the Commonwealth moved to exclude ACCA or have them go by their old report, right?
Right. And Your Honor, I'm going to answer your question, but with just the quick point that this is really much different than ARCA because two reasons. We are the defense, and ARCA is a rebuttal to the prosecution's case. That is much different than a prosecution changing its theory of the case at this time.
I understand that. I'm just asking if you have another option.
It's not what I am saying that I am proffering. I think the only remedy here is exclusion and a Rule 14 violation.
And you're not waiving that.
I'm not waiving that.
No, I'm not asking you to.
Your Honor.
Okay, a continuance for how long?
I could have a better answer perhaps to that question tomorrow. I haven't given what's been going on. I haven't even had a chance to talk to ARCA at all.
Right, so tomorrow morning, let me know that. All right,
In Your Honor, I will do that, of course. And I will also say, without getting into an elaboration of it, we have to look at all the witnesses that we called. I'll give you an example. Mr. Whiffen, I had my whole a significant part of my cross-examination of Mr. Whiffen based upon going through human volitional conduct off that phone that was after that 1162 trigger. And a lot of our defense and theory is based upon that's been in existence now for several months. And again, I go to the bottom line that the proffered reason in Mr. Burgess's report is to align with the data on Mr. O'Keefe's phone, and then that's been around for a long time. So that's my answer to Your Honor's question.
All right, thank you. Mr. Brennan.
Your Honor, this disclosure is not a Rule 14 violation. The Commonwealth, just like the defense, is entitled, continues to work on their case and study their case as time goes on. This issue, the relevance of this issue, has been clear throughout the case, including my opening statement. The issue is that clocks are different. There is a clock in a Lexus that runs on a different time than that of an iPhone. If you recall in my opening statement, I talked about the fact that there are variances between those clocks. So instead of a moment that coincides happening at the precise second, sometimes there's a variance of time between the two. So the Lexus clock could be at a variance with an iPhone, but the event still could happen at the same time, given the clocks have different times. The defense provided a report by a person by the name of Mr. Tsorga, a noted expert witness who they've listed as a witness they actually called. Mr. Tsorga wrote a report, and in the report, he suggested, based on his analysis, that Mr. O'Keefe's phone always ran late. That means if the texting data, the black box data from the car, has an event at 12:31:38, and Mr. O'Keefe's last movements were 12:32:16, last user interaction 12:32:09, there is a variance between those times. We asked our expert to review their expert's report to see if he was accurate that the variance means that these times would never align. And that's what he did. He studied the data, he studied the waves, he studied the Lexus black box relative to the time. Doesn't change anything, doesn't change the data whatsoever, just adds to the time. What he learned from his opinion is that Mr. Tsorga was wrong. He used information from different phones, not recognizing the items that these timelines came from and that his time estimates are wrong. So then he looked at the time of the event of the ignition on and off, and he compared that to the Waze data. And when he did, he found that he could identify what the actual differential was. Instead of guessing that it was within the 30-second window, it was somewhere around 21 to 25 seconds. And that 7 minutes before the collision, Mr. O'Keefe's phone was 21 to 29 seconds ahead, which means you subtract that time, which puts it in the same variance that we've been arguing from the beginning, that the collision occurred at the same moments when Mr. O'Keefe last had user interaction, and that reconciles with the data. It does not change the text screen data or the black box information on the car whatsoever. It does not change ARCA's analysis whatsoever. We received this report on May 8th. I was surprised to receive it. I welcomed it. We turned it over on May 8th. There was no delay. It's been a week now. The defense has had this information. And so this is not an attempt to align anything. While it may reconcile or identify that variance more closely, it doesn't change any data whatsoever. And so this is not a Rule 14 violation. The effort was in response to disclosures that we believe were wrong by the defense expert, and it's clarified and it is favorable for us. And so we should be able to use it.
Did you intend to use it in your case in chief, or only if this witness disorder, I don't remember reading that name, so I don't know how to pronounce it.
Case in chief. My case in chief, because we now have this available data. As I said, this wasn't ambush, isn't something that we sat on. It was in response. Fortunately, we received their expert report, which caused us to focus more closely. And now that we've identified that variance, rather than having an open variance of 30 seconds, we should not be precluded from favorable information that has been revoked by or reported by the defense.
Okay. Yes.
I'll do it quickly.
Okay.
Attorney Brennan has provided a lot of information, and he has accurately provided information, but he's got the time completely wrong and the significance respectfully completely wrong. I'm going to hit his four categories quickly. He said he referenced Mr. DeSorbo, who is a defense witness. Two points about Mr. DeSorbo. First, Mr. DeSorbo provided his expert report within the reciprocal discovery deadline.
Okay.
And he provided that report months ago.
Okay.
So if, as I heard Attorney Brennan, he's saying the reason why we're getting something on May 8th is because Mr. Burgess supposedly is responding to that. That was months ago. Okay. The more apt point is, or an even more apt point is, Mr. DeSorbo was responding to the information of Aperture. It wasn't like Mr. DeSorbo was coming up. He was rebutting as defendants do. So, and it's Mr. DeSogra, D-I-S-O-G-R-A. Again, D-I-S-O-G-R-A. So that's an important point with regard to Mr. DeSogra. Now I want to go to Attorney Brennan's comment about clocks are different. I agree with Attorney Brennan on that. The shortcoming for Attorney Brennan's argument, however, is that the clocks are different concept has been in existence in this case for over 6 months. I can give you by memory Mr. Whiffen's report of December of 2024, where his report went into the different clocks and what their significance was. So that is almost 6 months ago, at least 5 months ago, the issue of different clocks has been in existence in this case. So therefore, the issue of different clocks dates back to then. But even more fatal for the Commonwealth's argument is that Mr. Burgess himself issued his report and talked about the difference in clocks. He already knew it. He already had it.
Did he testify to that last time? Did he testify?
Aperture was not part of the first trial.
All right. I thought Burgess was, no?
No one from Aperture was.
Aperture was, and I thought he may have been something. The name just sounded.
Neither familiar. Burgess nor Welcher were okay. part of the first trial, but they were retained. Aperture was retained. I believe in October of 2024.
Okay.
And at best for the Commonwealth, Aperture had. And Mr. Burgess and Dr. Welcher had Mr. Whiffen's report that talked about the clock differences. So the clock differences cannot be, as the Commonwealth is proffering, some sort of new information that caused Aperture to provide a new report. This variance that Attorney Brennan talked about, it's called the clock drift. A more layperson's term is a variance of time. Mr. Burgess, in his original report months ago, has a whole section on clock drift. That's not a new concept for him. He's just changing the drift.
Okay. So what I'd like to do, because I want to address the other issue and I don't want to keep people here too long, can you wrap it up, Mr. Alessi, or is that...
In 60 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor... The last point I wanted to make, and I think I heard Attorney Brennan correctly, is he said he was surprised that he got this report dated May 8th. That's what I heard. So if the Commonwealth is surprised that they got it, that should mean, to me, Your Honor, be an outstanding, fetching reason to not allow it, because they're surprised to get it. And I can lastly say this, Your Honor, there's nobody that's more surprise to getting this than the defendant when we got it on May 11th.
Okay, thank you. The other issue about calling your expert on rebuttal, Mr. Brennan, based on the late disclosure of the ACCA materials. What's your argument on that?
I won't iterate the entire past, but Your Honor has found discovery violations. Your Honor has found that the, I want to phrase this properly, the efforts of the defense were improper. And inevitably, we've now received an extraordinary amount of discovery on the most important issue in this case, well beyond the discovery deadlines, without any excuse. The court, understandably, has overruled government's objection and has stated that is going to allow the defense to proffer two expert witnesses in a very complicated field, in an issue that is the heart of this case. You're going to allow them to testify, despite the fact that we have not had adequate time to review, to prepare, and to address it. The Commonwealth has the burden of proof. The Commonwealth has an obligation to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. And this isn't simply late disclosure of some evidence. This is a massive amount of evidence of the most critical issue. And so we provided this information to Dr. Wetzel. As you know, he was away. He did not get a report until maybe May 7th. He did not have a chance to look at it until May 9th. An extraordinary amount of work, effort, and expense has gone into preparing our case for the jury. He is still in the process of reviewing the materials. There are entirely new subject areas within this information, well beyond the simple four opinions that they gave at the beginning. There are studies, there are demonstrations, there are experiments. This requires not only review, but an analysis, testing, vetting, and then preparing testimony to address the claims made by the defense experts. Not to get into a battle of disparagement, but our expert has found extraordinary issues in his first reviews of material. And some of those concerns lead him to need, his opinion, to actually conduct his own tests to demonstrate the failures of these ARCA witnesses. That's going to take time. You've heard from the ARCA witnesses themselves. The amount of data they received, they estimated they needed 5 weeks. And they were given 5 weeks despite all the discovery deadline violations. They were given 5 weeks. We did not get the report until May 7th. And so we believe we are entitled to have our expert review all the materials, do his testing, provide opinions. None of that is going to happen anytime soon because he still has not finished reviewing all the materials. There's many, many gigabytes. He is in a difficult schedule. He is away tomorrow, Saturday. We were going to try to begin to prep at the end of the weekend. There is no way he's going to be able to testify anytime soon and have all of this validation and vetting and testing.
So what is it exactly you're proposing?
So what we would like to do is have him testify about what he has prepared. He's had adequate time to prepare. If either of these ARCA witnesses testify and they introduce new opinions, new testing, new demonstrations, he should be able to continue reviewing the materials, actively engage his own testing now, so by the time the defense case is over, he will be prepared to come back and address the new issues, not the older issues or regurgitating his testimony, but to address any new issues that were provided in violation of discovery orders, and so that he can then address the jury on those specific new issues. I see no other way of this expert fairly being provided to the jury. The unfair prejudice cannot be cured in any other way. So we ask that he be able to continue his review, offer rebuttal opinions on anything that is new, and not to encroach on anything that's been previously provided.
Can Burgess testify after Welcher?
No. No, because Dr. Welcher relies on Shannon Burgess' information material. It will make no sense. I thought about it. It makes no sense to the jury, his presentation, unless Shannon Burgess has an opportunity to provide the background information.
All right. Mr. Lassie, I'll hear you on this.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think and I understand that it's very well understand the time of the day, so I'm going to do this hopefully efficiently. When we're talking about ARPA and the information of ARPA, it's very important analytically to put them in their two proper buckets. The first bucket is the information and opinions of ARCA that have been been in existence since February of 2024.
Yeah, let's focus on the beyond. Let's focus on
Good, because my pithy conclusion is there should be no prejudice on that.
And I don't think the Commonwealth's even suggesting that. So
we're focusing just on the, quote, new information bucket. Your Honor, it's very important to understand that what ARCA is doing is in response to the testing of Aperture. ARCA did not come up with new approaches. We, again, to state the obvious, are the defense. We get to rebut what the prosecution has put forward. And so what ARCA has done with the new information, new testing, is simply to rebut what Aperture has done. So I do not understand the length of time or the lift, if you will, that's being proffered for Aperture. Now with regard to the time period, Your Honor has already determined what the appropriate approach is for the new information from ARCA. Dr. Rentschler was on the stand, and with Dr. What, you said, when can you get me the information? And they said, I think it was May 6th or May 7th, whatever, and they met the deadline. They did it. We proceeded along with the trial with that information. We complied with that request to continually try to claim that there should be ongoing remedies of something that's already been decided, I do not understand.
So I did leave open. I did leave it open to address.
You did leave open the time, but Your Honor didn't leave open that you were going to continue to address this matter as if the defense is making perpetual violations.
there was a determination made, and then the question was the remedy. So I'm just addressing the Commonwealth, positing that somehow there's continuing violations. My final 2 points. What Mr. Brennan is seeking is improper. What it's seeking is the most extraordinary situation, which is have Aperture come before the jury, testify to certain things, have ARCA have to come on, and then have Aperture come back and essentially have almost a rebuttal to a rebuttal as of right. I do not understand that process. I do not understand that proposal. It inverts the order of proof. It prejudices the defendant because it almost ipso facto gives a rebuttal to the defense. I believe, Your Honor, the final point is, if Your Honor is inclined to give Aperture more time, and I haven't even heard a deadline yet for Dr. Welcher. It's still open. What I would recommend, Your Honor, is that we follow the proper order of proof. We determine when Aperture can conclude its review of the ARCA work, and that there be a reflection that keeps the order, namely that the prosecution comes in with Aperture, Dr. Welcher, and Mr. Burgess, and then the defense, as part of its case in chief, puts on ARCA, and we make the determination as to what happens there. Otherwise, what we're happening is here, it's almost a self-serving matter where the Commonwealth is getting to put on certain witnesses here from our witnesses and then have an automatic rebuttal. And Your Honor, I just think that's improper and prejudicial. There's another, and importantly, it's a burden shifting to the defense.
All right, so I have a question for you, Mr. Lessie. Are you still thinking that if the defense puts on a defense, that will take roughly a week and a half for that to take place?
That is our best estimate still, Your Honor.
And not holding you to this, because obviously you have no burden. If ARCA is part of that defense, when in that week and a half time frame would that be?
We haven't made a final decision, Your Honor, but we're pretty close that it would be toward the end.
Okay. All right. I needed all this information now, so I appreciate it. All right. Thank you.
Court, all rise.
There you go. That was the after party.
And a party it was.
Yeah. I mean, interesting stuff there. The first part, Judge Kennedy not making her ruling on it. Their main argument with that whole thing, though, is that there's the late stage expert interpretation under the guise of supplemental. I should read this again. The defense's core argument is that they're being set up to fail by the state sneaking in late stage expert interpretation under the guise of supplemental evidence. And they're asking the judge to shut it down. What the prosecution essentially is saying on this is that, okay, these timestamps are different. And timestamps matter a lot in this case. A phone and the vehicle are different. So you can't be basing vehicle timing off of the phone or vice versa. They're both going to have their own timestamps, and you have to figure out how that aligns correctly. And basically what they're saying is... there's a mark on that vehicle report that shows a strike.
And when did it occur?
You know, it has to be accurate, so it can be as, you know, correct as it can be here.
Well, because this could be what sinks the entire case.
Yes.
It's not just a, you know, what time did so-and-so have a drink? No, this is what time did this alleged possible crime possibly happen.
So it'll show if there was a strike, basically, you know, around the time Karen backed up. What happened? When did that vehicle register that strike? And that's important. Because yeah. kind of shows she struck something. What was it? Well, if there was nothing else around to strike, I'm going to guess John O'Keefe. Just a wild guess.
Well, I know people, and self-included, I used to drive a Mini Cooper, and the clearance on that car was like this much, like an inch. I mean, it was low to the ground. It was a low rider, and sometimes I'd hit curbs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a really good driver. I know that it sounds like Rain Man, but there's an old reference for you. But I would hit the curb once in a while, and my rims, well, they showed it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one instance for Karen Reed, there is a man who died who may have been hit by a car. Did she hit him? This is extremely important information, and it has to be accurate.
Yeah.
His life was in the balance, and now hers is.
Yeah. It'd certainly be manslaughter. As far as the other two, I don't know.
Yeah. They got to get this right. So what do you think? They're not going to delay the trial, are they?
I don't think they would. I mean, they have allotted so many weeks for this thing. If they're ahead of schedule, they may have some days where they can say, hey, we can... I don't know. I mean, anything is possible, technically.
Wow. I mean, they've already got the jury. I mean, they're not sequestered, but
yeah.
these people are putting their lives on hold.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can't, you know, take another week. Sorry, you can go back to work or yeah. whatever. Just kidding. Don't talk about it. Don't think about it.
Yeah.
It's a tough spot to be in.
It is, and I get why the defense does not want it to come in. Obviously, it's going to be, you know, check the box pretty definitively on at least one of the charges. As far as, you know, getting to second degree, you know, that's, it's going to be how that's interpreted. Doesn't always even have to mean that she had any sort of intent. It's just more so that there was knowledge.
And her own words might be the knowledge that we need.
Yeah. So
again, shut your mouth. Don't talk. Well, I would say listen to your attorney, but what's up, Alan? You should have told her to shut her hole.
They haven't been, I don't know. And that whole thing makes no sense to me. Like, why are you letting her talk? Like, or is she just ignoring you? I don't know. I do not know the answers to any of those questions, but.
Nor do I.
Not a good day for the defense and the trial of Karen Reed.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.